Hi, your name is?
Don Beatty. I'm a senior marketing manager in the Consumer Client Services Group at Intel.
You're going to take us through Intel, is that right?
That's right.
First of all, Don, I love what you guys have done with the color here. I think the gray works very nicely with the gray, which works well with the grayish blue.
We really try to keep a very similar working environment. Basically, everyone at Intel should infuse.
It's good. It makes people feel that they're all basically the same, that there is no individuality, there's no hope, there's no sense that life has possibilities. Look at H10. Is that what you'd see in a parking garage?
Well, hello. I want to start by letting you know, if you work for Intel, all of us here at East Lake Church are just praying for you. That seems very rough. I also want to welcome all of you who might be watching online or maybe at one of our other church locations. Thanks for checking us out. And I'm just excited to be here today because, to be honest, this is kind of a good season of my life to be on a stage in front of you because I've been working out, which I'm sure you already noticed based on the gun show going on here today. But I found, however, in this new season of trying to work out again, it was a little bit more difficult for me this time. Because I usually do this kind of on-again, off-again cycle of fitness where I go really hard for a season, just work out really hard and, you know, eat well, and then just out of nowhere, I slam on the brakes and eat donuts because I don't want to get too strong, you know? I don't want to be bulky. That's not my thing. Not the look I'm going for. I'm going for more of a natural look, you know, like I naturally don't work out. So I've almost hit my goals. But I do want to, you know, improve my health and get back in shape. And so about a year ago, I purchased a home gym. And I felt like now that it's been a year in my garage, it's time to use it. And that last one's not even a joke. It's just a sad look at my health. But I have been putting it off because I just didn't have the proper motivation to get out there and work out. You know, it's hard. So I was trying to figure out what can I do to motivate myself. And I remember I'm just kind of scrolling through iTunes. I finally decide, okay, today's the day where I'm just going to get out there and use it. So, you know, I'm scrolling through iTunes to find that right song, you know. We all have that song we have to find that motivates us to work out. And I couldn't find Taylor Swift's Shake It Off. So I just kept looking. And in doing so, I stumble upon something that has revolutionized my workout program. There are these motivational speeches you can listen to on iTunes that are set to like techno music at times. And it's kind of cool because it's like this old man who you know in his past was like a, you know, Marine Corps drill instructor who's retired. And he's just yelling at you the whole time, making you feel terrible about yourself. It's awesome. And so it motivates you to kind of be a better version. And I was going to try to explain it to you, but I feel like the best way for you to understand what I'm talking about is just to have a little taste yourself. So check it out.
Are you going to be a lion or a sheep? The king of the jungle or another insignificant number in the herd? A leader or a follower? Do you even lift? Do you even lift? Do you even grind?
I just want to lift so many things right now. Right? That's the reaction to that. They're awesome. And so you just continue listening to them. The reality is, if that won't get you ready to do Pilates, nothing will. And I've been ready. So I have been out there in the garage just going for it. Hey, if you're going to use these, just know they come with a warning, okay? And the warning is this: you won't be able to stop working out. You'll be overmotivated at times. The first time I'm listening to it, I was just going to run 1 mile. After 3 miles, I decided, okay, I should stop before my heart gives out. And then I get back home and, you know, I'm like, okay, I'm done working out. 3 miles is enough. But then he's in my ear like, hey, do you want to be a sheep? And I'm like, no. All right, I'm going to keep working out. I'm not a sheep. I'm a lion. And so I did a full body workout that would make Chuck Norris smile. And afterwards, I'm just completely, you know, just exhausted. But in the midst of my workouts, I was just so motivated and impressed with myself. Shamelessly, this is also true. I started taking some shirtless selfies and texting them out to my friends and family. So if you received one of those, I apologize. And I was just trying to motivate them. I'm like, I'm doing this. You should take back your health too, and let's work out together. But it wasn't like, you know, motivating them the way it was me. And I know that because the only response back I got was from my older brother, who just said, quick, somebody get this man some sunlight. So it wasn't working for them the way it was for me. But I was motivated, so motivated that it took me like 60 minutes to kind of come back down to reality. That's what motivation can do, right? I mean, it can motivate us. It can get us to do the things that we know we should do and things that maybe we've even been putting off. And hopefully, that's what this series has been for all of us. Motivation in our work life, really motivation to work our best as if we've been doing it for the Lord. And that's kind of where come from our theme verse for this series. So what I want to do to start off today is really all of us together out loud at whatever campus you're at, or if you're watching online, read it as well. But we're going to read this out loud together as we get started. So it's in your notes. It'll also be on the screen. And if it's your first time here, just know the way we do this at Eastlake Church is we all read it in our outside voices. So let's read the theme verse, Colossians 3:23 together. Ready? Go. In all the work you are doing, work the best you can. Work as if you were doing it for the Lord, not for people. Remember that you will receive your reward from the Lord, which he promised to his people. You are serving the Lord Christ. As we close out this series here today, I want to talk about an issue that if we're not paying attention, can really sneak up on us and cause us to miss out on some of God's purposes for us and our work. And the issue is this: if we're not careful, we can begin to elevate our work above God. See, our work, although it's an awesome opportunity for us to be able to worship God every day by working as if we were doing it for him, is also uniquely qualified to become really an object of our worship, even to the point of replacing God and becoming what Scripture would call an idol. And the reason for this is kind of obvious. It's mostly because it's our source of income. Where we get our money, and that feels good. Or for some of us, it's a source of where we get we feel appreciated. You know, you work hard, and a teammate comes over and says, "Hey, well done! Thanks for putting that work in." And it feels good to get kind of the attaboys, right? For others of us, it's the fulfillment we get from just an honest day's work. It feels good to work hard and do it well. And then there's those of us who just feel like, man, there's some sort of calling that you have towards your job. And so because of all of these reasons and probably some more, our work has this, you know, potential to become an object of our worship like an idol. And now we mostly don't pursue idols. And if we do, we don't call them idols. I don't think we consider ourselves, probably none of us in here consider ourselves as people with idols, because, you know, we don't carry around little statues or big statues. And so you're probably like, okay, so, you know, what do you mean by idols? Well, the actual definition of idolatry is this. It's looking to something that's been created to give you what only the Creator, God, could give you. And based on that definition, we can see how even people who love God could begin to look to things that have been created, like our jobs, to provide us with the purpose and fulfillment that really we should be looking to Him for. And so what I want to do today is just kind of talk through a few things we must remember in order to keep this from happening to us in our jobs. And so if you're a note taker, I encourage everyone to take notes and follow along. I want to talk about the first thing we need to remember to keep this from happening to us, and that is, number one, we must remember my work should be worship, not worshipped. Our work is important, I mean, like we read in the theme verse, but what happens when our good intentions of working as if we're doing it for the Lord turns into our work becoming our Lord? See, this idea of idols was so important to God that when he was giving the Israelites the Ten Commandments, his 10 laws that he wanted them to follow, the very first law he gave them deals with this issue of idolatry. Listen to what he says in Exodus chapter 20. It's in your notes. Here's what he says. He says, "You must not make for yourself an idol of any kind." And I would encourage maybe a circle, those three words, "of any kind." "Or an image of anything in the heavens or on the earth or in the sea. You must not bow down to them or worship them, for I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God who will not tolerate your affection for any other gods." You see, this verse makes it very clear that idols come in all shapes and sizes. They can be of any kind. It's also important to go back and think, well, why would God make this the first commandment? Well, one of the reasons I think that is because I think God knew how easy it would be for us to fall into this trap, this trap of putting other things ahead of God. Other people say that the reason why this is the first of the Ten Commandments is because if we could just follow this one, then the other nine would come more naturally to us out of our love and relationship with God and keeping him number one. But regardless of the reason why he made it the first, God clearly reminds us in this verse that there's a rightful order of things. And he wants us to maintain that rightful order, because when we do things out of order, it usually doesn't go well. It's kind of like the first time I told my wife that I loved her. When I first saw her, we were in college, and I saw her, and I instantly knew she was the one. I mean, I just knew right off the bat. I looked at her. She was beautiful. She was funny. She was smart. Basically everything I wasn't, she was just the one. I knew it right away. And so once we started dating, as things became more serious, I just knew we had reached that time where I was supposed to tell her that I loved her. We're going to go to that level. And so I'm trying to think of how many dates we had at this point when I was ready to tell her. I think we had one date so far. We were on our second date, and we're coming home from the taco shop because I really wanted to impress her. And on the way home, we're in my truck, and we're just driving, and I knew it was the right time. Love was in the air. I mean, the mood was right. You could cut the tension with a knife. She was totally checking me out. And I was like, man, this is my moment. I need to just let her know how much I love her and how I feel. And so we're just driving, and really out of nowhere, right? I just try to, muster up the, sexiest voice I could imagine, which is really difficult for me. And so I just went with, I love you. You would think it would have had a different kind of effect. See, for my wife, it wasn't quite love at first sight for her. She needed a few more sightings. So when I said, I love you, her response to me, I'll never forget it, was, don't say that again. wasn't exactly what I was going for in that moment, not what I had thought would happen. And I learned in that moment there's a rightful order of things. So single dudes, here's what I know. You need to at least eat 3 meals together before you confess your undying love. I don't know if 3 is the right number. All I know is 2 is not the right number. There's a rightful order of things. Order matters, and it matters to God, right? I mean, he says he's jealous for your attention. And his rightful order in your life is number one. Everything else is to come after him. And so I think it's important that we keep in mind also that the idols don't start off as bad things. Right? We make good things our idols. Money, careers, achievement, medals, credentials, success, all of these things aren't bad, they're good. In fact, that good things have more of a likelihood of becoming our idols because they get our attention. They become things we desire. And so like a fly who gets focused on the fly zapper and can't look away, sometimes these idols become things that we start to look to. And we stop focusing on God, and we bring our focus to this thing that we can't take our eyes off of. And begin to look to it more than we look to God. And that's really when something becomes an idol. Is when our primary focus is taken off of God and it turns towards other things, including our work, and we begin to look to these things for the fulfillment and purpose that we're looking for that can only be found in God. And that's what this is really all about. It's really just a matter of where's your heart. That's what this whole idol thing was about for God. He wanted to know what matters most to you. And he takes it to a whole different level a little bit later on. After the Ten Commandments, he again speaks to the Israelites because what they had done was disobeyed, and they began to create these idols. And he says, listen, idolatry is not just things you do. It's a condition of your heart. He takes it to a deeper level, and he says, you can actually have an idol in your heart. Here's what he says in Ezekiel. The verse will be up on the screens. He says, therefore, speak to them and tell them, this is what the Sovereign Lord says. When any of the Israelites set up idols in their hearts and put a wicked stumbling block before their faces, and then go to a prophet, I, the Lord, will answer them myself in keeping with their great idolatry. I will do this to recapture the hearts of the people of Israel who have all deserted me for their idols. So clearly, what God is concerned with is, what has my heart? What has your heart? And so making work our object of worship isn't just about external actions, it's more about internal commitments. So if it's about internal commitments, then what I'm not saying is we should just all work less and pray more. I'm not saying you shouldn't value your job. You should. That's what this whole series has been about. But what I am saying is that God clearly wants to be number one in your life. And anything that is in that seat other than God has your heart. It's an idol. Now, one of the reasons we can kind of get focused on the bug zapper trance towards our work is because at some level we begin to believe it's our jobs that make us matter. And so that's why the next thing we need to remember in order to keep this from becoming an idol in our life is we must remember point number two, if you want to write this down. Work is what I do, not who I am. It's what I do. It's not who I am. You know, there's something healthy about hard work, but there's something equally healthy about knowing who I am outside of my job. So much so that God set the example in this. When, again, later on in the Ten Commandments, one of the Ten Commandments, God establishes a weekly reminder of how our schedule should reflect who we are, not what we do. And he does this when he sets up the Sabbath. And listen to what he says in Exodus 20, verse 8. He says, "Observe the Sabbath day to keep it holy. Work 6 days and do everything you need to do. But the seventh day is a Sabbath to God, your God. Don't do any work." See, God establishes this weekly reminder, a pattern of our life, of stepping out of what I do and taking my focus off what I do and bringing it back to who I am and who he has created me to be. That's the purpose behind the Sabbath. And if we're not careful, we can become like an actor, right, who gets hired for a play or a show and gets this character and in preparing to, you know, play their character well, really starts to memorize the lines and try to get to know how their character would respond in any certain circumstance so that they can really act their character out well, and then begins to, in the process of trying to do a good job in the play, begins to blur the lines between their true self and the character they play. And there's actually a form of doing this to kind of become a better actor. It's called method acting, and they actually do this. They try to feel and think and become one, really, with the character or the role they're playing. And sometimes when they do this, it gets a little bit out of hand. For example, in Rocky 4, Sylvester Stallone goes ahead and he wants to find out what it's like to really get punched by a boxer, and so to understand his role better. And so he asked co-star Dolph Lundgren, aka Ivan Drago, right, the Russian machine, to really knock him out. He later on in an interview goes on to say that was a bad idea, right? We're all like, yeah, no brainer, right? He explains, "Later that night, my blood pressure went up to 260. I went to the hospital, they put me in an emergency jet and flew me back to America. Next thing I know, I'm in an intensive care for 5 days with nuns walking all around. He hit my heart so hard that it banged against my ribs and it started to swell. And that's what happens in a car accident. So basically, I was hit by a truck." That was not a good idea for him, right? He's kind of blurring the lines between who he is and his character. And he's not the only one that this happened to. Listen to what happened to Shia LaBeouf as he was getting ready for his role in the World War II movie Fury, when he was that awesome soldier, great movie. Listen to what he did to kind of become one with his character. He says, "I joined the U.S. National Guard." Well, that's commitment. He's committed. "I joined the National Guard. I was baptized, accepted Christ in my heart. I tattooed my surrender and became a chaplain's assistant. I spent a month living on a forward operating base. Then I linked up with my cast and went to Fort Irwin." And here's where it gets really weird. He says, "In that season, I pulled my own tooth out. I spent days watching horses die, and I didn't bathe for 4 months." And if you're like me, when you heard that, you're like, now I understand a little bit more about Shia LaBeouf and why he is that way. I get it now. But the truth is, regardless of what your job is, if you're an actor or whatever it is you do, whenever we begin to blur the lines between who we are and what we do, it always gets a little bit weird. The reality is your role at work doesn't define you. It's your job. It's not your identity. The truth is, if you have little to no interests outside of work, if you get restless when you're not working, if you're always giving, you're making yourself available to work 24/7, never taking any kind of a break, if maybe when you're at home with the family, your mind is still at work, well then maybe, just maybe, you've defined yourself too much by your job and potentially even have made it an object of your worship. And there's a lot of reasons why we might do this, and we all might have our own motivators to identify with what we do, but I think one reason that we all would have in common is work makes us feel valuable. If we're honest, many of us would say that we try to prove to each other our worth by showing each other our work. It's like we say, hey, look, I matter because look what I do. This is what makes me valuable. I'm important, right? But this way of thinking is so opposite of the Jesus way of living. Culture has always tried to divide people by race and sex and job title and income, right? And in some places, entire systems have been created to keep certain groups divided, as if to say, these are the important ones and these are not. But Jesus was always seen flipping this system of division and was always bringing different people from all different backgrounds and socioeconomic classes together. Why? Well, it's because Jesus had a different measure of seeing someone's value. He saw people as children of God. And as such, they don't need to prove their worth through any other means. Listen to what John chapter 1, verse 12 says. It'll be on the screens. It says, but whoever did want him, who believed he was who he claimed, and would do what he said, he made to be their true selves, their child of God selves. You see, your true self, this is important to understand, your true self, who you are, is not what you do or where you work. Who you are, your value, comes from the fact of whose you are. You're a child of God, and he made you, and he loves you. Honestly, the toughest critic that we are all trying to prove our value to is ourselves. I love this quote by Anna Quinlan from her book, A Short Guide to a Happy Life. It says, don't ever confuse the two, your life and your work. That's what I have to say. The second is only a part of the first. There are thousands of people out there with the same degree you have. When you get a job, there'll be thousands of people doing what you want to do for a living. But you are the only person alive who has sole custody of your life. And see, God establishes this Sabbath day, an opportunity for us to step back and remember where our true value comes from. And as we do this, if we establish a rhythm of pausing and stepping out of our job and what we do and begin to remember who we actually are as a child of God, then our ability to work as worship to God can increase as our desire to work for approval decreases. For just a moment, I want to take a second and really listen to Jessica's story as she explains how she works not for the approval of others, but as worship to God. Let's check this out.
I had no intention of staying here. I really was planning on coming in, getting my degree, and leaving and working in suburbia, serving the average middle-class client. But the more that I was here through my internship and learning more about the needs of the city, the more my heart grew for the city and the more I realized the vast need for good social workers and solid believers to come here and live here and reflect the love of Christ to clients through our work. Right now, I work at a psychiatric emergency room for one of the large city hospitals here. And I really feel that most of the clients that I work with there are, as Jesus says, the least of these in society. For many of them, the hospital is all that they have. The hospital is the only source of support that they have and the only constant that they have in their lives. I really work with them to try to instill a sense of hope that things can change. I'm not able to overtly share the message of Christ, but I am able to act out the mercy of Christ through my work by bearing the burdens with my clients and hoping in them and encourage them that they are worthwhile, even though society tells them that they're not, and that they are a person, and treating them as a person rather than treating them as a homeless person or treating them as a prostitute or treating them as a drug addict. Seeing the beauty within each client that passes through our doors. I very rarely get a thank you from my clients. I often get cursed out or sometimes physically assaulted or people just leave. I've really come to the place where I work the best that I can with my clients and I serve them in the best that I can and I meet their needs the best that I can, but I am not working for man. I'm not working for the praise of my clients. I'm not working for a thank you. I do believe that in my work, I am honoring God and worshiping the Lord through doing the best that I can.
The truth is, in my life, what I've found is that the seasons of life where I'm working to prove to myself my value, then I often allow myself to be defined by what I do. And when I'm allowing myself to be defined by what I do, then I begin to live for what I do. And if I'm living for what I do, then God is not my number one. That's why it's so important for us to remember who we are. We're a child of God. Your work is just what you do. The last thing we need to remember in order to keep work from becoming an idol of our heart is simply this, if you would write this down. Number three, we need to remember that God is my ultimate provider. James 1, verse 17 says this. It says, every good and perfect gift is from God. This kind of gift comes down from the Father who created the heavenly lights. You see, this verse, once again, paints God as our Father who gives good gifts to us, his children. It says, every good thing that you've ever had, that I've ever had, has all come from him, including your job. And so it's so important to remember this because it's actually sometimes confusing because every time I get a paycheck, it feels like I'm the one providing, right? Or at least it feels like my boss is providing. But it's important that we would remember that ultimately God is the one providing for us. And he can choose to do so through our job and provide us an income that way. But still, ultimately, he's the one providing. And seeing God as our ultimate provider can help us keep our priorities in check, right? Remember that he's the one that we should focus on, and he's our provider. And by provider, that doesn't mean he makes us rich. It's probably more true to say that we'll have what we need. And that's what Jesus makes clear in Luke chapter 12, where he kind of is talking about this idea of God being our ultimate provider. Here's what he says. Jesus says, look how the wild flowers grow. They don't work hard to make their clothes. But I tell you that Solomon, with all his wealth, wasn't as well clothed as one of these flowers. God gives such beauty to everything that grows in the fields, even though it's here today and thrown into a fire tomorrow. Won't he do even more for you? You have such little faith. Don't keep worrying about having something to eat or drink. Only people who don't know God are always worrying about such things. Your Father knows what you need. But put God's work first, and these things will be yours as well. I love this because Jesus says, listen, you have these things that you're working hard to provide for yourself, but remember, okay, God's your ultimate provider, and he knows what you need. And he gets back to the heart of the matter, the issue of the rightful order of things. He says, these things that we can begin to pursue and try to provide for ourselves, if we would just put God first, where he belongs, these other things will come as a result of our keeping God number one. He'll be our provider. And it's important to say, it's kind of a little side note, it's important to understand that this whole idea of God being our provider, it really goes hand in hand with our wallets. There's a reason that God asks us to bring our first 10% or tithe, because he wants us to maintain the rightful order of things in every area of our life, including finances. As a matter of fact, it's almost the best way to show God that we trust that he's our ultimate provider when we're able to step out in faith and generosity and faithfulness, bring our tithe. It's our way of saying, God, you're number one in this area of my life because I trust you. And Jesus says, as we trust him in that area and trust him and put him first, then he'll provide. And what I found in doing so is you cannot outgive God because he is, in fact, the ultimate provider for our lives. And understanding this is huge because if we get this, then that means we can work differently. We can move from work being an object of our worship because it provides us with a paycheck towards God getting our worship because ultimately he provides us with every good thing that we have, including our job. And when we do this, remember that God's our ultimate provider, it brings about so much peace. There's some freedom. There's a moment to be able to take a deep breath because the pressure comes off of us. Listen to what Isaiah 52:12 says as we close. It says, go in confidence and grace. No rushing, no frantic escape. There's no need to be anxious. The Eternal One goes before you and behind you. The God of Israel paves the way with assurance and strength. He watches your back. So my question is this. Is it possible that in the midst of just trying to get by, or maybe in your 9 to 5 or whatever hour you work, is it possible that maybe God has taken somewhat of a back seat? And if you would answer that question with yes or even a maybe, then my challenge and encouragement to you would be to go ahead and fix it, to do something about it and not put it off. I think it's so easy for us to think, well, okay, that might be an issue, but I'll take care of it later. I've recently been reminded that it's never good to just try to take care of something down the road that you know is broken today. In the past 3 weeks, I have spent a total of 18 hours at the dentist, sitting in a dentist chair. That's because before 3 weeks ago, I hadn't been to the dentist for 7 years. All of you moms and dads who brush your kids' teeth every day, you just like gasp. You're like, he's disgusting. I know. It's bad. I hadn't been, and the reason why I hadn't been is because I don't like the dentist. And I knew my teeth were jacked up. Like, I just knew it, okay? I couldn't take a bite of anything, okay? It was just painful all the time. And my wife would be like, you should go to the dentist and get it fixed. And I'll be like, no, I'll take care of it later. And I kept putting it off, until I couldn't any longer, until it was just too painful. And so 3 weeks ago, I finally go to the dentist, and he's kind of checking out my teeth, and he's seeing, what's wrong with them. And he's like, here's the worst part. He told me, he's like, your teeth aren't all that bad. He's like, you actually have really good brushing technique. And I'm like, well, thank you. You didn't have to say that. That was really nice of you. He's like, and you floss pretty well. And I was like, well, that shows you how much you know. I never floss. So who does that? It's time for that. I've got 2 kids. Floss. And he's like, the real problem with your teeth is just that you had some cavities a while back that became big cavities. And if you had just addressed them years ago, they wouldn't have been a big deal now. They'd have been easy to fix. But he's like, now they're a big deal. And so then all of a sudden these power tools come out and they're sawing away and drilling away. And I don't even know if these are my real teeth anymore. Whatever they did in there, like, okay, it's different now. I can't feel what I'm biting. It's weird. But the work they had to put in to fix was only so big because of how long I waited to take care of it. The reality is waiting to fix what we know is wrong today doesn't help anything. It makes it harder later on. So if you're here today and you say, man, maybe there are some things in my life that are out of order, the rightful order of things in my life, God has not been number one. Maybe it's I valued work up here and I've elevated above God, or maybe it's something else. Maybe you just are realizing I've never made God number one. He's never been first. My encouragement is to fix it. In a moment, the band's going to sing one more song, and I just want to encourage all of us to remain seated. And during this song, I'm just going to ask that you would experience this song and listen to the lyrics. Consider, I mean, the name of this song is First. Consider, is that the place that God has in your life? And if not, maybe even, my prayer would be even in this moment, during this song, that maybe you would, in the privacy of your own heart, because remember, that's where idolatry starts, the heart. Maybe in the privacy of your own heart, you can begin to correct the order and just say, God, today I want to make you first again. Help me correct that. So as the band gets ready to sing, let me pray for us real quick. God, ultimately we know that you love us, that we're your children, and that's who we are. And God, I pray that if there's someone here that would say, I've elevated work above God, or maybe things are out of order in my life, God, in these next moments, would you help us begin to correct that? Not put it off till later, but really start to address it even now in our heart. And God, that during this song, you would speak to all of us. Amen.
Before I bring my need, I will bring my heart. Before I lift my cares, I will lift my arms. I wanna know you, I wanna find you in every season and every moment. Before I bring my need, I will bring my heart and seek you. I wanna seek you, I wanna seek you first. I wanna keep you, I wanna keep you first. More than anything I want, I want you first. Before I speak a word, let me hear your voice. Of pain, let me feel your joy. Ooh, I wanna know you, I wanna find you in every season, in every moment. Before I speak a word, I will bring my heart and seek you. First, I wanna seek you. Right.